Indoor Cycle Instructor Podcast number 43.
This is Amy, the Senior Group Fitness Instructor at the Indoor Cycle Instructor Podcast. Are you looking for a spark of inspiration to bring to your next class? Find us at indoorcycleinstructor.com.
Hey, and welcome back to the Indoor Cycle Instructor Podcast. This is part two of my interview with Mark Tickner, and we'll just continue on right from here. Now we're going to transition into what I'm going to call kind of foundational, but what we were talking with was more on the presentation, general, you know, from the motivational side, those things. Christine asked the question, what types of things do you do during an indoor cycle class that translates well to great conditioning for outdoor cycling?
That's pretty easy because all my sessions that I teach are specific to cycling outside, and all the classes that I do are pretty much the training that I would do as an elite endurance athlete. So I'm not saying that I treat my students or members as elite athletes, because that'd be crazy, but I could adapt the type of work that I do outside that I've learned over the many, many, many years, well, 20 odd years of competing since I was at school. So I adapt the training programs that I do from my own training to the classes. So for me, it's actually quite easy. I don't find it difficult to put sessions together because it's something that I've been doing for 20 years.
Okay. And did I hear you say that so you're incorporating your own personal training in your class?
I don't. No. I don't actually get my training benefit when I'm teaching. So I don't actually train when I'm there. Yes, you're going to get, you know, you're riding, so you're actually getting a little bit of a training benefit, but I'm not there to train myself, no. I'm there to teach and coach, so I have no problems actually riding really easy, hardly putting my heart rate up at all, and actually getting off the bike and seeing people and giving them, you know, some personal one-to-one training and coaching as the classes go on. But I'm saying I adapt my training programs that I do on my bike outside, and I use those ideas and techniques and training sessions that I do outside and bring them into my classes. So no, I don't train when I'm on the spinner bike.
I got an email from, forgive me, it's Katri, K-A-T-R-I, from Finland, asked the question, is that, you know, as a professional instructor, how do you continue to make amazing lessons day after day? You know, how do you, you know, find something new as you're doing this over and over and over again?
I mean, as a master coach for training bubble coaching, it's one of these things that you're always trying to learn. You're always trying to find the latest teaching techniques and find the latest training sessions and, you know, looking into research papers on the latest, you know, fitness testing or sessions that the professional cyclists are doing and stuff like this. But it's something that I just love doing. It's something I enjoy doing. So I'm always trying to find something different for my participants and students. And Michelle, my other half, has the same problem. You know, we both teach the same classes week in, week out. We see the same faces week in, week out. So how can we make our classes, you know, interesting for those people that do come and see you week in, week out, month in, month in, you know, month out? And I suppose I'm always looking at my training coaching manuals that I'm using. I mean, I use many books that you can buy off the shelf to get a lot of ideas for my spinning classes. For instance, the Cyclist Training Bible or the Triathlete's Training Bible. And there are wonderful training sessions that are in there that you can sort of adapt for your own training classes. And there's also a new spinning ride book, which has just been it's just literally come out now, and there's, I think, 52 training sessions that you can use in your classes, and it gives you all the music and the profiles, and I think there are 10 different energy zones, but it's just literally come out in the spinning program right now. If there's any spinning instructors listening or any indoor cycling instructors listening, then you'll love this book. It's literally only been out, I think, for maybe 2 or 3 weeks. And it's fantastic. So this is going to give me lots of ideas, so let alone everybody else. So I'm going to buy it just to get the ideas for myself. All these sessions in there were put together by all the master instructors in the spinning program. So Michelle's looking at me going, me, me, me. So she was actually one of the instructors that put her profiles on there, and they included two of them in the manual. So she's very happy about that. So I have to Have to get that in. She's laughing at me now.
We might have to get Michelle on here in just a second. Because she's as close, and I'm sure everybody would love to hear from her as well. But
no problem.
Let me ask this question from Keith Scott Fairchild. And he asked the question, is what is your process for creating a new profile? You know, what do you start with? Is it music? Is it a theme? Do you start with a physiological profile? What do you do?
Well, first of all, I have a look at my periodized program, which another master instructor put together for us. So I have a look at what class I'm teaching, whether that be endurance or strength training or whatever it is for that day. So once I know what the training is I'm supposed to be teaching, I will then try and think about what I'm going to do. So I for me personally, I find it easier to put the profile together first. So for instance, if I'm doing a strength class, I'll think about, well, what do I want? What do I want to achieve in my strength class? You know, what is my profile going to be? Am I going to do one hill, a mountain climber? Is it going to be two hills or three hills or four hills? Are they going to be short hills, long hills? You know, what sort of heart rates do I want to use? What sort of, you know, training adaptation do I want to take place and things like that? So once I found the profile that I want, I'll then sort of tweak it and fine-tune it and make it as simple as I possibly can to teach. So, for instance, if I'm teaching a 45-minute strength class, I'll know that the first 5 or 10 minutes is a warm-up, an introduction. The last 5 or so minutes is just a cool-down and a stretch. So I've got about 30 minutes to play with in a 45-minute class. I'll then just simply put together a profile. Maybe there'll be 3 10-minute climbs, and I'll know, you know, I'll pretty much think about what I want to do on each climb. Are they going to be the same intensity in each climb? Is it going to get a little bit harder each climb? Is the cadence going to increase? So you've got to think about, you know, finding different ways to make the class dynamic is really a good way of looking at it. So that's what I look for. So I try and make the class simple so I can teach it simply. And so it's simple for the students to understand as well, because if they don't understand what they're doing and riding to, then it's, you know, it's difficult for them. So make the classes as easy and as simple to understand. Once you've got the profile together, then I'll then go around trying to find the perfect music together for it. So, you know, music, I suppose, is the most number one sort of thing which sort of inspires me as an instructor, which is why I love to ride in a spinning ride. It's the music that sets my, you know, juices flowing, so to speak. So I try and find that the perfect music to fit the right climb that I'm doing. You know, is the music going to start quietly and build into the climb like the climbs do outside, or is it going to start strong straight away, just like an Alpe d'Huez might be? So I try and find the music that's going to fit the climb. It may take a while, and I'm sure you know yourself, John, that putting the music together sometimes takes a hell of a long time, to be honest.
Yeah, I know. It's probably the most unrewarding. Well, I mean, it's personally rewarding, but it's the most unrewarded financially time that an instructor spends.
Without a doubt. I put together a 3-hour ride, as I mentioned before, a charity ride for Johnny G's Foundation, and it was a 3-hour ride, and that music took me, I'm not kidding, 40 hours to put together and to fine-tune and tweak. So it took me close to about 3 weeks to actually find all the music, put it together, make sure it fitted right, to mix it right, to actually get it right. And it was, I was pulling my hair out, 40 hours. I could not believe how long I was taking. And Michelle was looking at me going, you're crazy, you've done it, forget about it. But I couldn't. I was not happy with it. It had to flow right. It had to fit perfectly in sync with the cycling on the screen, on the video, where Lance Armstrong attacked Jan Ulrich on the climb and Alpe d'Huez. And, you know, so yeah, music is my passion, and music takes a very long time for me to put together, sometimes on my classes. So I'm sure you're going to ask me about music at some point.
We weren't really going to, because there were no other questions on music, but I'm going to ask the question, are you mixing your own music? So you're using like Mixmeister or something like that to put it all together?
You've chosen the program the exact program that I use, Mixmeister. Yes, in the UK we have, I think, different musical laws, licensing laws to Europe and maybe the US, and we have to have our own musical license from a company called PPL, the Phonographic Performance Liability. It's something that all freelance instructors have to have, and we have, as a master instructor, I've certainly got to have all the most up-to-date licenses. So I have what we call a Pro Dub license, and this gives me This gives me a license to be able to mix and copy my own music. It's similar to a DJ's license, but not as in depth as that. But yes, I do mix my own music. Once you start mixing your music, it just makes your classes just come alive, I think. You know, having that little break of a few seconds in between songs and having the first part of the song build in and then fade out, sometimes it takes away the energy of the class. So yeah, mixing music is a big thing. But you have to be careful in the UK. Not all instructors can mix music. I know a lot of instructors do, but with the licenses, the licensing laws over here, we just have to be a little bit careful, that's all.
Exactly, because in the U.S., you know, our facility carries those licenses.
It's the same as the U.K., but in the U.K., we still have to have our own license, just basically to cover yourself. I mean, I'd rather have just that extra £50 license in the year, just in case, especially as a master instructor going to all these events around the country and around Europe. You know, you never know what's going to happen, so we're always trying to make sure that we have the top licenses that make, you know, to cover ourselves in any eventuality.
Keith continued on, but I'm going to roll this into a question that was asked by Buzz Truitt. And how integral to an effective indoor cycling training program do you see heart rate and power? And do you use this, you know, as part of training of new instructors?
As part of the spinning program, the heart rate training is one of the foundation key elements to the spinning program. So yes, we use heart rate monitoring and heart rate training as part of our teaching, and I think it's an integral part of it. It's probably one of the most key elements to riding on a bike, to be honest. Power is, I think that's a luxury, to be honest, and we as part of the spinning program don't have power on our bike, and it would be fantastic if we had a power meter on our bike. I know there are other indoor cycling bikes out there that do have power. How accurate they are is another thing. And also, you know, if you're going to use power, I think the instructor has to be very experienced in using power effectively in your class. I mean, you're looking at a number on a computer. If you're just looking at most instructors will probably think, you know, the higher the number, the better and things like this, which is not the case. So if you're going to use power in your classes, it's got to be very specific, and the instructor's got to be trained in it very specifically. So you've got to have a lot of knowledge on it, probably got to be training using power yourself and have been using it for quite a number of months to actually know how to use it effectively in your classes. So is it useful in classes? Yes. Is it effective? Only if the instructor knows exactly what they're doing with it. So would I use it? Yes. If we had a power meter on the spinner bike, I would, because I have great experience with power, not only using it myself, but with the clients that I actually coach that have power meters. So I've been using power as part of my coaching for probably 3, 4, 5 years now. But heart rate training is the key. We use heart rate zones in the spinning program, just basically so we teach people how to use the heart rate monitor effectively. I mean, if someone was to come up to me in the class and say, this is the first time I've used the heart rate monitor, then, you know, I'd let them have fun with it first. I wouldn't just start saying, right, you know, what's your maximum heart rate, or where's your lactate threshold heart rate or anaerobic threshold heart rate and stuff like this. I'd maybe say, you know, use your heart rate monitor for 3 or 4 weeks and just have fun with it. Just notice what your heart does and, you know, notice the biggest heart rate possibly that you've seen, and maybe use that as a guide to where your maximum heart rate might be. But as well as heart rate, I would always use rate of perceived exertion as well, RPE. So that's key as well. So noticing the similarity between heart rate, what you're actually pushing out at that particular time with your heart, and also how you perceive your effort to be. So fine tune those two together, and then they'll start understanding a little bit more about how they're actually training. And I think, yeah, power is basically the icing on the cake. It's something that I would love to get in the indoor cycling program, but I shouldn't really say any more about that, to be honest, because possibly there might be something on the pipeline a little bit down the line, but I'm not too sure. So we'll see.
Oh yeah, well, you know it's coming. I know, because Schwinn just introduced their bike with power, and Kaiser's out there, Cyclops. A little bird told me LeMond is in the process, so it goes there. But now Richard Baldarelli asked the question, you know, but isn't all this, you know, power, cadence indication, whatnot, kind of in stark contrast to Johnny G's original vision you know, of instructor-guided classes with no distracting numbers.
It is. Johnny G's philosophy at the beginning was, you know, is to encourage everybody into the studio to ride the bike to get fit. That was his key phrase, to be honest. I want people to come in and get fit and healthy. And to be honest, I still agree with that. I mean, heart rate monitors, yes. Cadence monitors, yes. They can be distractions. As a master instructor, when we're on stage, we use heart rates as a guide, but we don't really focus on it too much. We're there to, you know, to give people that chance to just let their hair down and to have fun on the bike and to, you know, get fit with other people that are there just to have fun. So to start with, you know, when the people are first starting to become involved in indoor cycling, I would just say, have fun with it. Don't worry too much about heart rate to start with. You know, if you're not used to using a heart rate monitor, fine. If you're not used to rate of perceived exertion, that's fine too. But just have fun with it, because you've got to find that fun first. If you haven't got the fun, you can't get the passion for it, then you won't come back. So have fun with things first. I mean, when you start, you know, to get a bit more serious about cycling and you start to see some great physiological changes and maybe you've lost a bit of weight and you feel good about yourself and you're feeling part of the group, and then maybe you can fine tune the training a little bit more and maybe get a heart rate monitor and see what's happening. And so, yes, we do use heart rate monitors, but not in a negative way. It's all positive. So my classes, I don't, you know, 99% of the time, you know, I'm not focusing on the heart rate, and I'm focusing on heart rate to a degree. I set heart rate parameters at the beginning of the class, so I'll tell them where I want them to be training as a range to get the benefit of the class. But then I will then also help those that without the heart rate monitors. So I would try and use other things like perceived exertion and feel and breathing and, you know, just having fun with things as well.
Maybe I've got my Richards screwed up here, but another Richard asks, as a road cyclist with an emphasis on time trials, you know, they've always appreciated the contribution of indoor cycling to his training.
Okay.
He's noticed, however, though, that experienced riders tend to avoid indoor cycling classes, and there obviously are exceptions, but it's a trend, and it's not even a trend. I've recognized it for a long time. You know, how do we change that?
It's an interesting point. I have many friends, training partners, fantastic time trialists, road racers, triathletes, and they don't want to come to spinning classes. But I think a lot of the time these road cyclists have had bad experiences with pretty much poor instructors that are teaching all these contraindications that we mentioned earlier, you know, the really fast pedaling, the not really understanding about the actual, you know, the how to actually structure and basically train the class effectively. Because a lot of instructors don't come from a road cycling background or a triathlon background, or maybe a lot of instructors don't ride the bike outside. So I think it does come down to they've had bad experiences. But, you know, I think once you've tried an indoor cycling class with maybe an instructor that does ride outside, then I think you'll find that it's a very rewarding and a very positive experience. And in fact, especially in the UK with the weather that we have over here, you know, 6 months of the year, it's pretty much cold and dark very early when people have finished work, or it's raining or sleeting or snowing. And, you know, people have to come inside. So once they've experienced a fantastic instructor that does know how to teach an effective class, then I think it's a very rewarding experience. And, you know, we have many, many, many cyclists that come into our facilities outside, and Michelle has many cyclists from the local cycling club that come and just do her classes, you know, 2 hours on Tuesday and 2 hours on Thursday, because they love it. She teaches cycling specific training, uses cool music, and they wouldn't get that training even on the bike on the road outside. So I think once you've found that instructor that does teach that perfect class, I think that you will get find that group. So it can be very rewarding.
All right, perfect. You know, one question to jump back. We were talking about heart rate training, especially with someone new to heart rate training. When do you introduce the concept of a metabolic assessment as kind of the gold standard to really understanding your training zones?
It's interesting question. I mean, we fitness test as part of our business, and we test many, many people. I don't really push fitness testing as such when I'm actually teaching. I may have many people that come to me after class and ask, you know, you talk about percentages of heart rate and maybe lactate threshold, you know, or you know, how can I, you know, effectively use my heart rate monitor, because it seems to me, you know, my heart rate's, you know, it seems really easy compared to the numbers that I see or the numbers that you're asking me to work at and things like this. And I'll ask them about, you know, have you considered a fitness test? But I wouldn't push it actually while I'm teaching in my class, because it's in my eyes, it's maybe a little bit unprofessional, possibly. But I would actually certainly speak about it after class. So if somebody does ask, then I will actually talk to them about, you know, the benefits of it and how they can maximize their training and, you know, see the more, you know, the better results more quicker and things like this. So does that answer your question?
Well, it does. And actually, you know, because I have the exact opposite of view, is that it's been such a beneficial thing to me that I can't help but tell people how valuable it could be.
And it's very true. Very true. I mean, obviously, as we've got the fitness testing kit right here in our home, I test myself, you know, as regularly as I can, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times a year. And Michelle tests herself and we test each other. And it's fantastic to see. So, yeah, we do, you know, take our findings that, you know, into our classes. I do actually, you know, tell them, you know, I don't actually talk about the testing itself, but I do actually talk about lactate threshold. And the only way you can find your true lactate threshold is by doing a proper specific test. Or, you know, we talk about fat burning in class and, you know, learning how we can, you know, measure fat. And the only way you can measure, you know, how much fat you burn in your class is actually doing a proper fitness test. So, I do actually sort of give them little snippets, little tidbits, and I tease them with little things here and there. And you do find that when you tease them with little things, you'll find, you know, if you've got any questions, please feel free to come and, you know, see me after class. You'll find that you then have 4, 5, 6 people and you think you're trying to get away. And it's like, oh no, I've just shot myself in the foot there. So you're now going to speak to people after class and, you know, and you talk about it that way, which I'm more than happy to do. So I must admit, I said I don't talk about fitness testing in my class. Maybe I do. I sort of do it subconsciously, I suppose, and tease them with little things. So,
exactly. Okay. Yeah, because I teach a class. Matter of fact, today was my last endurance class of the year, because we do the same thing all winter long, and it's finally nice here in Minnesota, and so that's the end of my participation, or my class's participation. I have 30 people today. I had 5. Because everybody's finally outside enjoying the 3 weeks of summer that we have here.
Of course, yeah.
All right. Well, that's perfect. Anything else that you'd like to add, Mark?
I'm interested, actually. Maybe how many classes you teach, John?
I currently teach 2 classes a week. I have an endurance class on Sunday mornings, and then I have a early morning Monday class. And then I'm frequently substituting once or twice a week as well. But that's all my day job really allows for me to get to.
I mean, I've been listening to your podcast for a few months now, and it's a fantastic podcast. I love it. And
well, thank you.
You keep talking about your day job. What do you actually do as a day job?
Oh, I sell very large construction equipment and travel at territory around Minnesota. And so that's what keeps me from teaching in the evening, because I can never know if I'm going to get back in time or not.
And do you ride a road bike, or do you time trial, or are you a triathlete? What do you
I was one of these smokers on the couch here 15 years ago, and had a neighbor of mine that was very instrumental in helping me go beyond that, encouraged me, got involved just fitness riding, and then I'm very competitive, and then started doing some racing through the latter half of the 90s into the 2000s. Tore my bicep tendon that I had to have surgically reattached, and that kind of ruined everything from that point on. And then actually what happened is my wife and I discovered that my wife Amy, who I describe as the senior group fitness instructor in our family, we've just found that we used to ride separately. And it was always a struggle for her. I'm holding you back, this and that. So we've started riding a tandem now, and have for a number of years. And that's our mode of transportation.
Fantastic.
Right. Yeah. No, and I did a little competitive riding, but you know, when you're 40 years old trying to race 20-year-olds, at some point, you know, it's fun to do it, but you're never going to win.
Well, that's very true. You know, I'm pushing up, pushing a few years now. I'm 38, coming on 39, and next year I'll be 40. And you know, I'm hoping to go back to the Hawaii Ironman and qualify, and go back to the Hawaii Ironman next year and race as a vet for the first time, which is, to me, it sounds crazy. I'm a veteran. It's like, oh my word, what's going on? Where have all those years gone? And but. Yes. But I find as I age, I'm still getting quicker and quicker and quicker, which is fantastic. And so I think age is not a barrier. If age is just a number, it's not a barrier. It's something that I love, and I'll keep teaching the spinning program as well until I'm 60 or 70, I would think. But who knows?
Your participants, what as far as the demographic age wise, you know, what do you see in your class?
Where I used to teach at, I taught for a school. There's a very famous school in the UK called Christ Hospital. They wear these big long blue coats, and they're featured in many sort of old fashioned films and things like this. But I taught there, and the average age was probably around about 40, 45 with my 10 guys that used to come every week. And where I teach at Virgin Active, it's right in the middle of the city of the financial district in the city of London. And I think the average age there is more sort of mid-20s, early 30s, I would think. So that's pretty much the age range there, so 25 to 30. So it's very different.
Exactly. Okay, yeah, because where I teach, it's a very upscale club. And, yeah, the average age of my club is 40. And up to, I've got 60, 70, 75-year-olds, which is,
yeah.
and you ride with them outdoors, and they'll kick your ass. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah, exactly right. Yeah, we've got an indoor cycling instructor where I teach my triathlon club, and he's a good friend of ours in our triathlon club called Tom, and he's a mid-60s now, I think. I apologize, Tom, if he's listening to this, but I don't know how old he is now, but he's got to be 65 or so, 66, but he's an indoor cycling instructor, and he's in fantastic shape, and he can't, unfortunately, he's got knocked off his bike twice now in the last few years, and he's now said he's not riding outside, it's just too dangerous, but he's on the spinner bike and teaching his indoor cycling classes, and he loves it, and he's so passionate, and he's got a great following. But the age is not a number when it comes to teaching either. So I think the oldest spinning instructor I've taught was 74, I think. So
oh, that's marvelous. That is just marvelous. Well, I'll tell you what, Mark, I'm going to thank you for being on the podcast. And if we can transition, I'd love to talk to Michelle for a moment, if we can.
No problem. Well, thank you for inviting me on the podcast. I'll be very happy to come on it again sometime in the future.
Oh, thank you. I was just going to ask, and we'd love to have you.
Thank you. I'll pass Michelle over to you.
Hello, John.
And that concludes my interview with Mark Tickner. Stay tuned for part three when Michelle Colvin takes the mic and offers some additional very valuable information. I'm very confident you're going to enjoy. You're just going to enjoy hearing her. Questions or comments? John@indoorcycleinstructor.com. And until next time, thanks for listening.